Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
Oh, g'day everyone.
It is episode 80 and it is the 5th of October. Mm. We've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We're going to be talking to a friend of the show, Senator James Patterson. Yep. Going to be running through a few of the articles he's had out this week, one in the AFR, one in the Australian. And we're also going to be talking to Dr. Bella DeBrera, another one of our great friends of the show, about, what did we talk to her about?
Oh, Bella's Big Break.
Bella's Big Break, yes, getting retweeted by Jordan Peterson, her latest Gillette article. We'll talk a few of the issues that came out of that one, and also a bit of Israel chat, because she's about to do a trip over there.
Yep, staying at youth hostels, checking out the site, should be great.
We need to buy that acoustic guitar, but anyway, that'll make sense later in the show. Nina, pressing the buttons for us, as always. Are you excited for this week's show?
Yeah.
She sounds pumped.
That's as most excited Nina's ever been about anything.
Yeah, no, she's fine. She's actually raged out about a few of the issues that we're talking about later. She's told me, so it'll be interesting to get her thoughts on those.
Very cool. We need to make Nina the podcast ombudsman.
I was under the understanding she was
yeah, but like the on-air one instead of like the post-show feedback. We need on-air feedback
because post-show feedback is withering.
I'm still recovering from last week's one. Anyway, so let's talk about it. So what should we start with, Pete?
Well, there's a story this week that has been pretty close to my heart. I'd love to kick that off.
Okay.
Now, one of us this week, last night in fact, made our debut on national television. James Bolt sitting across from me was interviewed by Andrew Bolt on the Bolt, what's it called? The Bolt Report.
Yes.
And the segment was called Whiskey with a Mate.
It was. Yeah. So, Dad had someone lined up for Whiskey with a Mate segment. If you do watch the Bolt Report, it's basically just... Dan and Mate sharing whiskey, button down chat, and someone cancelled on him, so he was like, I might need
Don't
you to come
say
on.
That.
Yeah, but they said it on air.
Okay.
That was my introduction.
So he was a ring in.
Oh, I was a ring in. But yeah, good chat. I have absolutely no memory of what we talked about. It went by very quickly. I genuinely could not tell you, but mainly because I was blackout drunk. No.
I was going to ask, how many whiskeys did you get through?
I had like one sip on air, and then I was like, because I was so terrified of like, you don't want to be the guy that has a sip of whiskey and then just starts like a coughing fit.
Yeah.
Like on national TV.
Yeah, okay.
So I was like, you know, one sip, don't cough. And then you can finish it after the show. So that was my rule for myself going in.
All right.
Yeah.
It worked. You've been on TV before.
I have.
So, but this is your first speaking role.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like first as me. like not playing a character.
Before the real, like...
yeah, the real, the essence of what I'm about.
So I was with you yesterday. We were working on Hey, What Did I Miss?
Yeah.
Got a few calls from your mum.
I got the calls, not
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you got a few calls from your mum. What was going on there?
It was... Mum being mum, wanted to make sure it was okay.
Don't make too much fun of your dad.
Yep, basically that. Just have some fun and, you know, just stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. It's a family affair down there in the Bolt family. Now, I was going to ask you what you talked about, but you just said you couldn't remember.
Can't remember a thing. I believe at one point, Theresa May's dance moves got shown on screen.
Yep.
I need to review the footage.
Okay.
Review the game day film plan for next week.
Yeah, no, I've got my best man on it trying to find that footage, but it hasn't been released yet by the Bolt Report. When I say my best man, I mean I tried for a little while, couldn't find it. And then I got asked our media manager, Evan Mulholland, to look. Evan Mulholland, what's his official title? Media guru.
Yeah, media guru. Head honcho.
Yeah, head honcho in charge of the media.
Grand poobah of media communications.
All of those things. Now, I got him to jump on Twitter and find a bit of Twitter feedback for you, James.
Yep.
Response has been mixed.
Well, on Twitter.
Yeah, on Twitter. So, I'll go through a few of them.
Okay.
Boy, oh boy, the Bolt Report should be renamed the IPA Father and Son Show, sponsored by Murdoch and Coke. I'm switching
off. I mean,
they've
got a lot of money. If I could get some residual, that would be something.
Would rather watch paint dry. So I don't know why this person was watching the Bolt Report in the first place, but there you go.
That's a hate watch. That's a classic hate watch situation.
Yeah. No, the old hate watch every now and then. Q&A. So one from @FlashVVV. Andrew, your boy James is a cheeky bugger. I like him already. That's positive. That's good. From another user.
How long are we doing this?
we've got three more.
Three more.
The Bolt Report son will grow up to be an F-wit like his father for sure. #AusPol.
Way too late for that one.
So is that... negative, that one. Yeah.
No, but that's future tense. You need to go current tense with that one. Yeah, like, we'll grow up to be in it. No.
That didn't strike me as that wasn't a fair comment. So, Leo Hogan, #The Bolt Report, great to see Andrew's son on. I like the cut of this guy's jib. Oh, no, hang on, that's the next one. Yeah, so great to see Andrew's son on, @Leo Climate Scam. And the last one, I like.
Is there a reference to the cut of my jib in this last one?
There is a reference to the cut of my jib in this last one from at Nina L.
Oh, so Nina.
What? No.
Yeah, no, this no. is. I found this on. Well, Evan found this on Twitter. I like the cut of this guy's jib, but what's with his stupid haircut and giant head?
Oh.
At Nina L.
Wow.
No, I actually made that last part.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't have that card.
Nina would have sent that through one of her thousands and thousands of burner accounts that she uses to get back at people.
No, yeah. But it sounded like it was a fantastic thing because I think our podcast downloads went through the roof. So
new listeners to the show, welcome. Hopefully you guys stick around. So let's get into some actual stories that actually happened. So
that did happen.
It did happen, but I wouldn't call it a massive story. Anyway, something that is a story.
Yeah.
So yesterday at the University Chancellors Council annual conference in Adelaide yesterday.
What a blast that would be.
To be a fly on the wall. But there was some important stuff that went down there. So you had a whole lot of university chancellors and they were standing up for free speech. So this coming out of the Australian. So the University of Western Sydney Chancellor Peter Shergold has warned that attacks on free speech are a relatively recent development in Australia and university governing bodies should be prepared to make tough decisions to defend the integrity of their institutions. Now, this is something that we've been discussing on the show for a while.
Yep.
It started in the US with all the safe spaces and, you know, shutting down conservative speakers. It's come over here. We had the Bettina Arndt stuff that we're going to be talking to James Patterson about later in the show. So it is kind of cool to see some chancellors stand up and say this shouldn't happen.
Absolutely. We interviewed James Patterson about this later in the show, which was yesterday before this kind of story came out. But this is really good news. You know, we could sort of point out how hypocritical this is in a few different ways. But let's be optimists. Let's be optimistic. This is a great thing. This is something the IPA has been talking about for a while, as you said, and this could be another one of our big policy wins that Wayne Swan is talking about, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, so...
maybe the penny's dropped.
Maybe the penny has dropped. Sorry, front page of the Australian today. So Matthew Lesh, friend of the show and research fellow here at the IPA, he was quoted... So his speech to the conference was quoted in the front page of the Australian. Yep. So he was saying, "I speak to academics and students at your institutions almost every day. They tell me about a worrying culture of censorship. So make sure you're going reading the Australian. You can see a bit more of Lesh's comments and you can also go to the IPA website and see some of the articles that Lesh has written recently and two this week, actually, about university threats to freedom of speech."
That's right. Lesh was actually speaking at this conference. Yep. And I think they just listened to him and thought, you know what? This guy's right. And
it's time.
Here's our statement.
Yeah. But, they burned all the speeches they had prepared. And they wrote new ones.
You know what? This guy's right. But Lesh gets calls from academics all the time, every week.
Yes.
People saying, "I can't speak what I think."
Yeah, so it's a really important issue.
Left wing.
Yeah, really important issue. Glad to see there's a whole lot of developments happening on it. Sorry, we talked about Wayne Swan.
Yes.
Let's get into it.
Okay, so Wayne Swan, yesterday morning in The Guardian, there were excerpts from a speech that he gave last night to a left-wing think tank. And he said that essentially the left-wing think tanks need to get better at selling their belief system, like the IPA and other centre-right think tanks. I'll quote, "Selling a platform for better society involves more than winning elections." Very true. "It involves winning arguments. Over many years, despite the best efforts of many, we've been outgunned in that area for far too long. People may not necessarily agree with the IPA's propositions and those of their fellow travellers, but over time, their mental ability to resist such arguments get broken down by forceful advocacy and repetition. When it all boils down to it, the underlying subliminal message that emerges is this: government self is the problem." Oh, and then he sort of verbals a bit. Yeah, that's it. So that's the quote.
Well, you did say at one point, they've been successful in framing the policy conversation on inequality, workplace relations, deregulation, corporate tax, and regulations.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Wayne, if you do want to write our next our next membership request email, you've got all the talking points down, so it sounds like you'd be very good at it.
Well, what a guy. Let's not forget this guy was Global Financial Minister of the Year in 2011.
Yeah.
This guy knows what he's talking about.
This guy, the leading expert on how people should spend their money and get better at things.
Exactly right.
So I did like, I was like, left-wing think tanks need to get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
So expect them to get some more funding under a future Labor government. So.
Yeah, well, I've got a good way of making the left-wing think tanks better.
Yep.
As to privatise them. Submit them to the market.
Yes.
They'll become more efficient, more competitive, just like Qantas, and then they'll be almost as good as us. We should point out, you know, this is not just the IPA. There's a lot of great centre-right think tanks out there. CIS, ATA, this is a group effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to take all the credit.
So John Roskam, executive director here at the IPA, had a media release responding to Wayne Swan's comments. You can read that on our website. The key quote from me was, "The IPA's research and voice are a prominent feature in public debate, not because of the forceful advocacy and repetition, which Wayne Swan described, but because the IPA represents mainstream Australian values." So make sure you're going to the IPA website and reading that. Also, Wayne Swan this week, he's been pretty busy. Mm-hmm. Former
treasurer.
No, I know that part. The Global Financial Minister of the Year.
Yeah.
So The radical rights attack on the ABC has been led by Tony Abbott, Malcolm Turnbull. This is a tweet of his. Tony Abbott, Malcolm Turnbull, and Scott Morrison through massive funding cuts and, as we now learn, through attacks on its independence. Mm. If a 0.3% increase in funding is a massive tax cut, which is what it was under Malcolm Turnbull, no wonder Australian tax rates are so high.
Yeah, well,
like, if an increase is a cut.
Yeah, well, it must have been a lean year for financial ministers in 2011. But that was some very...
Yeah, there was a lot of bad stuff happening around the world. a lot of stimulus packages, but yes.
That was a fine piece of primary research from Daniel Wild.
Yes, fantastic stuff. Thanks for that, Daniel. So if you want to see the graph, that's in our Hey, What Did I Miss email last week. Pete, if I can move on to another story.
Shoot.
So Kanye West had himself a Saturday night. So he was the musical presenter on Saturday Night Live, and he did two songs. And at the end of the show, where they sort of, like, if you have watched Saturday Night Live the whole way through, last sort of credits, they come out and they hug each other and, like, reflect on what a show it was and, like, the credits roll. Kanye West grabs the mic. He's wearing, like, a MAGA hat, so, like, the red hat, you know, Make America Great Again. Grabs the mic, and the producers cut out.
Yeah.
The bootleg version, I guess, so filmed by his producer backstage. We'll play the audio for you now.
Tralo, tralo, tralo. You see, they laughing at me. You heard them, they scream at me. They bully me. They bullied me backstage. They said, don't go out there with that hat on. They bullied me backstage. They bullied me. And then they say, I'm in a sunken place.
Sorry, I played the speech just like a minute or so. Yeah, so that's what he said, and that got cut out of the show, and there's this whole lot of controversy, like, how dare Kanye West spout all these views on Saturday Night Live. Like, my favorite part, like, Kenan Thompson, long-time Saturday Night Live cast member, one of my favorites, actually, so I feel bad saying this. What Up With That, the recurring segment he does, is amazing. Go Google it. But he said, like, he felt the cast felt like they were being taken hostage by someone spouting political points that they didn't agree with on the show. It's like, mate, have you watched your own show?
Yeah, like, welcome to my world.
Yeah. Like, the day after Trump got elected or whatever it was, like, that week, they had Kate McKinnon as her Hillary Clinton impersonation just sing Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. Like, that, like, not as a joke, just as in, like, that's how sad we all are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When you told me about that previously, I thought it was like a...
No, it wasn't played for laughs. It was a very somber, solemn, like, I can't believe she lost.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are a comedy show.
I can accept people going, oh, yeah, Kanye West is wrong, but the fact that, like, Kanye West shouldn't talk about politics in you know, pop culture, he's like, hang on.
Well, also, like, this is how much of, like, a political thing, like, comedy is becoming. Because if you're the director of Saturday Night Live and you see Kanye West grab a live microphone at the end of the show, how was your first thought, we need to cut away from this?
Yeah, like, this is going to rate its proverbial.
That is going to be the most viral clip in the world next tomorrow. And you don't get any of the ratings from it. Silly.
There you go. I'm disappointed in Saturday Night Live. I thought that they were better than that.
Yeah.
Don't be disappointed that I'm disappointed. So let's...
That would be the final crumble. They haven't been rating too well the last year. Once they lose Peter Gregory, they might actually... that might be it.
The cultural influencer that I am.
40 years down the toilet. Cool. We've got another story here. So this is a bit of a weird one. So this got published in Quillette this week, and it's starting to make its way around the world.
This
so
is great.
Yeah, so you got three self-described left-wing academics, James Lindsay, Helen Pluckrose, and Peter Bokoshian. And I'm definitely going to be pronouncing that wrong, so I apologize.
I didn't know they were self-described as left-wing.
Yeah, so they made a YouTube account of what they've done. So, and then in that, they describe themselves as left-wing. And basically, they wanted to prove that you can write any old crap about, like, gender studies or intersectionality, which they say are important topics, and, you know, you do need to discuss, like, race and gender and stuff like that. But they did want to prove that you can get anything published in a journal these days.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. So you might have, like, I don't know if we talked about this in the show. I definitely made, like, the short list of things we wanted to talk about. But, like, a while ago, there was a prank about one paper that got published, and the title was Rape Culture and Queer Performativity at Urban Dog Parks. And it was like an academic just went to a dog park and just watched how dogs interacted and to talk about, like, rape culture because, you know, dogs will just hump things.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys remember that story at all?
I know these happen from time to time.
Yeah. So, well, that one got a fair bit of play around the world. But anyway, they did, like, five, including, like, the most bizarre one being they took a 3,000-word excerpt from Mein Kampf and just changed a few words so it would fit the rewritten in the language of intersectionality theory and that got published in the gender studies journal Ophelia.
Ouch.
Like Mein Kampf.
Yeah,
just
yeah, that,
reworked a little bit.
That bastion of logic and reasoned argument that Mein Kampf is.
Yeah, so that's where it's at. So pretty incredible story proving that you can actually get anything published these days.
Yeah, it's a great response for people when they say, oh, here's a study that shows this. You know, it's like, well...
Well, Mein Kampf got published in a journal, mate. Yep. So let's not... Like, yeah.
There's certainly a problem in academia. That's been a bit of a flavor of the week, hasn't it, James?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the last decade. Five decades.
Yeah, or since Copernicus, I guess. that's it for stories we got at the start of the show. So I'll just run through some of the other stuff that the IPA has been talking about. So we've had a pretty busy week for media, so I'll just run through some op-eds. So this morning, John Roskam, executive director of the IPA, he had an article in the Australian Financial Review, as he does every fortnight, reform ABCs and unis by funding cuts. So, you know, some of the topics we've been talking about earlier in the show. You can go read that. You can also read his media release, welcome in the comments by Wayne Swan, that we also talked about. Dr. Jennifer Marahasi and John Abbott. Dr. Jennifer Marahasi, friend of the show, we've had her on, talking about what would the world's climate look like if the Industrial Revolution had never happened. You can also read Morgan Begg, definite friend of the show, but foe of me and Pete. It's a weird dynamic we've got going there, but it's good. He reviews Scott Adams' latest book, Win Bigly, which discusses the Trump campaign, and there's a few Kanye West elements as well. So that was in the IPA Review, a really good article. And you can also hear Gideon Rosner, speaking of Kanye, reviewed the Kanye single Ye Versus the People, where Kanye starts talking about like when he started coming out as pro-Trump and he started wearing the hat. Like there was a song he made with, I think, T.I., or some rapper that's in friends with Kanye.
Not my wheelhouse.
Yeah, so, yeah, if it was a 90s indie rock song from the UK, Peter'd be all over this, but it's not. Indeed. But so Ye Versus the People, Gideon Rosner starts talking about some of the issues that come out of that. Cool. So thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you so much for subscribing. And if you are new to the show, welcome. Hopefully you guys stick around. We're available on iTunes, Podbean. You can download it through Pocket Cast. You can go through any of the apps that you like. Just make sure you are downloading and subscribing and telling your friends and family. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you're leaving us that 5-star review. Really helps us with the show. And if you want to get involved with other IPA podcasts, Great Books of Literature podcast, we've got a new episode coming out next week with Don Quixote. So if you do like Don Quixote, you want to hear Andrew Bolt and John Roskam talk about the issues that arose from that book and talk about the life of Cervantes in general, make sure you listen to that. And you can also go back through the archives for some of the other books that we had. We have a lot of good feedback for the Wuthering Heights episode that came out recently. Nina, if people want to become a member of the IPA, how can they go about becoming a member?
Just visit our website, theipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. Let's go to those interviews with Senator James Patterson and Dr. Bella De Burgh. Okay, we now welcome back onto the show Senator James Patterson, friend of the show. Welcome back.
It's always a pleasure, James. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. Now, it's been a few weeks since the last sort of leadership challenge at the top. So have you adjusted back to normal life yet? Are you just still waiting for a text message at a random time, like you need to be here, or how are we going with that?
I think so. I almost missed it because I was at an IPA event the night before. So luckily I got on the plane in time and didn't miss the vote because that would have been embarrassing.
Yeah, that would have been pretty bad. Just like, why? James should be here, I feel.
Now, to make the obvious gag,
yes.
Did you consider throwing your hat into the ring?
No. Okay. Very kind, though, of you. I always appreciate the IPA's support and encouragement. So
we're ready. I reckon we're ready for that. A J-Pat, what's his name? Kanye West double ticket.
Maybe not what Australia wants, but it's what Australia needs.
That's and right. deserves. Yeah. So let's get into it. So big week for you. You had two articles come out on Monday, one in the Australian Financial Review and one in the Australian. So we'll run through those. So the Australian Financial Review, you're talking about how red tape is such a problem in Australia. Now, I know you're a member of the Senate Committee on Red Tape. Mm-hmm. So how do we solve the red tape crisis that Australia's in?
Well, and I'm indebted to the IPA and the good work that they've done in this area. And that was actually part of my article, was pointing out the IPA's frequently cited statistic that it's costing Australia $176 billion a year. That's a serious drag on our economy. It's a $20,000 impost on the average household. And Australians shouldn't be labouring under that weight of regulation. It's a terrible weight. So David Leinhelm chairs a committee of the Senate looking into red tape. And it's kind of gone sector by sector, looking for really good examples in retail sales, in the health sector, in childcare, and looking at all the different examples. Private education is the next one we're about to do. And there's individual bad examples in each of those industries about the effects of overregulation. But what I wanted to do in the article is take a step back and think, not sector by sector, but what is the cumulative effect of this and what's the systemic way we can respond to this? Because none of the regulation really is sector specific. It's part of a broader problem, a tendency to overregulate that we sadly have in this country. And so what are the systemic things we can do to change that?
Yeah, cool. So let's talk about that. So two of the ones that you outlined there, there's one proposal that came out of the UK, the red tape challenge, and then there's another one out of the US that British Columbia was doing.
Canada. That's in Canada, mate.
That is in Canada. We'll talk about the UK one first, the red tape challenge. So what is that?
So what they had in the UK was basically going out to the community, going out to business and saying, tell us about what the red tape burden is that you have to deal with that is difficult, and we're putting the challenge on the community to come up with the things that are causing problems that need to go.
So if I were to say Peter Gregory's ineptitude...
I don't know if that would meet the criteria.
It's not red tape.
Very frustrating, no doubt. But
any audience at all for me to gripe about that, I'll take. So,
the community came up with these ideas, identified this regulation that was holding them back, and then instead of it being an obligation on them to justify why those regulations should go, it was up to the bureaucracy to justify why they should stay. So the bureaucracy had to go through case by case and say why any regulation was necessary and had to stay. And if they couldn't make the case, the UK in this instance, but you had to demonstrate it had to stay, and if they couldn't make the case, then it went or was modified, and so a huge amount of regulation came off the books that way, and it was really effective.
Do you think there's a good story to tell for the government here? Because you've got in America, Trump's deregulated a fair bit, and it saved taxpayers a lot of money, and they had a lot of growth, which is fantastic, and employment. Do you think that's something that you guys could sell, or even all parties could sell? Would other parties consider that as well?
Well, I was listening to the program a few weeks ago when you talked about Trump's success in reducing regulation, and he certainly has had some good success in the area. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the statistic was that he's reduced the red tape burden by $1.2 billion. Now, that's a good start. But the US economy is many, many times larger than the Australian economy. The US population is many times larger. And actually, in the first term of our government, the Liberal National government, we reduced the red tape burden by $5.8 billion. So even more than Trump has done. So we did get off to a really good start. But the problem is a lot of the things that we got rid of were relatively low-hanging fruit, relatively easy to go. Outdated acts, unnecessary acts, duplicative acts. And once you've done that, it's really hard to keep finding new, easy wins like that. And so what I'm arguing in this piece is we need to put in place systems that going forward in perpetuity will limit the growth of red tape, stop the growth of red tape, and hopefully even draw it back.
Yeah, one of those systems is what the British Columbia has done. And for listeners out there who want to learn more about it, I know Gideon Rosin has done a video for the IPA, which is available on our Facebook and YouTube channels. But British Columbia instituted a 1-in-2-out rule, I think it was, as approach to regulation. Now, that strikes me as something that can stay forever once it's in there. So do you want to talk about what a 1-in-2-out rule would be?
Exactly. So lots of people have talked about this. British Columbia has actually done it. But there's an interesting thing about the way they've done it. So they have a rule that if you want to pass a new regulation, then you have to get rid of two existing pieces of regulation. And that means that firstly, you have to justify a very high burden to bring in new regulation because you're going to have to find other things to get rid of. But two is it's kind of a natural way of cleaning up the statute book and getting rid of older, unnecessary, outdated things that otherwise might just sit there, but instead they're now going to be repealed in order to make way for new ones. So that's really good. But I think even more importantly is in British Columbia, they measure regulation in a really precise way. So we've tried lots of different measures in this country. I know in the IPA, the past, we've done a pages of legislation passed measure. And that's a good one, but it's very general. It's a very vague measure of how much regulation. In British Columbia, they identify the demanding kind of clauses in legislation that require you to do something. So it looks for keywords such as shall or must, and it counts that individually as a regulatory requirement. And so in that way, they can be really sure when they're bringing in a new regulation that requires something, they're getting rid of regulation that requires something at the same time, and you're actually reducing the overall burden, whereas any other way is much more imprecise.
Absolutely. So we'll move on to the other article you had, and this one was in the Australian. So you talked about how the free speech crisis on Australian universities is heating up, and especially with what we've seen out of the University of Sydney recently. We also had Matthew Lesh at the IPA here. He was also in the papers recently talking about this. Do you see there being a free speech crisis at Australian University?
Sadly, yes, and it seems like we are picking up the worst habits from the United States and from the UK, where I think it's even a more profound problem, where the instances of no platforming, particularly of conservative speakers on campus, is been rife for many years. And we seem to be importing the worst of that culture in Australian universities where we didn't previously have it. It wasn't really an issue in the past to organise for a conservative speaker or a centre-right liberal thinker to come to campus and talk in Australia, but it now is for two reasons. One, the activist left on campus has become more violent and more organised and more threatening towards different ideas being aired on campus. And two, mostly, sadly, our universities have been craven and they've been giving in to that and been weak and, in fact, effectively enabled the protesters to be more effective in doing what they're doing by placing the financial burden of dealing with those protesters on the people who are organising the events rather than the real perpetrators. So a conservative or liberal student group on campus now has to meet a financial cost of paying for security if the left chooses to protest against them.
Yeah, which is exactly what happened at the University of Sydney with Bettina Rudd. Like the Liberal Club's been stood with the bill. Now, I saw in Matthew's article, again, for the listeners available at the IPA website, Matthew's article, he called for more regulations in US style to ensure, to stop there being campus censorship, like actual laws in place. Is that an approach you support? Do you reckon we need stuff like that?
Well, I think the model example to follow is the University of Chicago, which has an amazing, really philosophical statement about the virtue of free debate and free exchange of ideas on campus and the unique role that universities have to play in that process. And they've upheld that and they say, if you're going to come to the University of Chicago, you might encounter ideas that you disagree with. You might even encounter ideas that you find upsetting, but that's part of being an adult involved in higher education. And if you don't like that, well, then there are other places for you to go. I'd like to see that adopted in Australia. And I would hope that it wouldn't require legislation on the federal government's part to do that. My preference is that's not the first way to deal with it. I'd rather universities dealt with it themselves. And from their vast sums of taxpayers' money, $16.9 billion a year, somehow found within them the capacity to meet any security cost that was required on campus.
Yeah, you think they could, if they really studied it, if they did like the 1-in-2-out real mum check into it, they could probably scrounge together the cash.
I reckon the Sydney University could come up with $475. If pushed, I reckon they could probably find it.
Great. What's a mum check?
A mum check is when you're a kid and you're trying to find something and your mum goes, well, did you really check? And they'll inevitably find it in like 5 seconds of looking. That's a mum check.
Yeah. Right. That's, I mean, you learn something new every day.
So if you're trying to find money to pay for the thing, a mum check would have found the money. Like my mum would have found money in the Sydney University budget to pay for Bettina Rudd.
I reckon they could find it from their paperclip budget. I don't think it would be all that hard.
I've got a question. So Matthew Lesh said, so just over the little cubicle barrier from me, and he gets calls.
Lucky you.
Yeah, well, you know, and Bella's there as well, and there's a blank one over there, but that's right. He gets calls from academics and people at university, weekly, basically, saying, I feel like I can't express my opinion. This is a problem. And a lot of them are actually like left-wing people to say, I'm left-wing, but it's bad to have a monoculture. Do you have colleagues from the opposing parties that see this as a problem as well, or is it more just...
I could probably count them on one hand, half a hand. There really isn't... There's certainly not a public acknowledgement that there's a problem. As Matthew pointed out, the shadow spokesperson for universities, Louise Pratt, said that she's not convinced it's a problem, but if it is, it's probably only shutting down hate speech anyway, so it's really a bad problem. And the truth is that the only reason that students need to organise these kind of debates and discussions on campus, and I know the IPA's Generation Liberty program's been at the forefront of this, is because universities themselves are not providing this. I mean, really, this should be part of the courses. Students should be exposed to different ideas, particularly those ideas that aren't common to them on the centre-right, on their own. But sadly, because they've failed to do so, students have to step up. But now the universities effectively want to tax them for stepping up and doing their job in the first place.
You know, there is this monoculture on campus. We've got generations of students that don't have their ideas challenged, generations of academics that don't have their ideas challenged. What's the end game like for that? What does that mean for Australia with all these people not having that opportunity to sort of test out their thinking?
Yeah, I think there's some pretty obvious, profound consequences for society, which we can look at for a second. But first of all, let's think about the consequences for the individuals. And Jonathan Haidt has written about this really powerfully in his new book, The Coddling of the American Mind, where he's troubled almost as much by what it does to his country and the higher education institutions as it does to individuals. Because think about it, if you are someone who is brought up in an environment who encounters no challenging ideas, no ideas that disagree of, that are protected by trigger warnings and safe spaces all the way through. Now, you can protect that person through primary school. You might be able to protect them through high school. You may even be able to protect them at university. But at some point, they're going to go outside your sphere of control and they are going to encounter those ideas. And realistically, they're probably going to encounter those ideas all the way through because of the internet, whether they like it or not. And so we have to be raising young people who are robust and resilient and able to encounter alternative ideas in a way that doesn't trouble them and doesn't upset them, in a way that they can respond to effectively and still be, you know, confident about their own beliefs and where they're coming from. Because otherwise we're going to raise a generation of people who are just completely incapable of navigating the adult world, and they're going to have a horrible, you know, existence in adulthood if they just aren't capable of doing that. So I'm really worried about them as individuals as much as anything else.
Yeah, I always, like, you talk about how it's like they're not able to see other opinions, but it's even bigger than that. Like, if someone genuinely can't fathom a university lecturer saying something that they disagree with, like, what happens if they ever go through a divorce? Like, if they have that little resilience to someone else not wanting something that other than they want.
It doesn't, you're right, it doesn't even have to be political disagreement or philosophical disagreement. It's just the difficulty you encounter in life in dealing with different people. And there is no higher authority that can protect you from that in the workplace, in community organisations, in your adult life, in your own family. So the idea that we should even try, I think, is a really damaging one. I'd much rather raise a resilient, self-aware generation that have encountered difficult, challenging ideas and experiences through their life and are robust adults as a result of it at the end of the process, rather than this hope that you can wrap them in cotton wool all the way through and protect them when you really is just not so, that's not, doesn't serve their interests.
Cool. Okay. So speaking of Lesh, now you are going, there's a lot of Lesh content in this thing. So you're going to be launching Matthew's book in Melbourne, Democracy in a Divided Australia. That's coming up on Friday. Do you see the same sort of divides in Australia that Matthew sees between, you know, the inner city elites and the outer city regular people?
I think we needed someone like Matthew Lesh as a kind of self-described, self-confessed inner, but self-aware inner, to really kind of go behind the scenes and chronicle the rise of the inners in Australia. I think it is a real problem. And I think inners are not only a small group of people, but they are a small insular group of people who only associate with each other and genuinely believe that they are representative of the rest of the community because they associate with people like them who have similar cultural backgrounds, educational backgrounds, live and work in the same places. They just don't encounter the other ideas out there and they think they're very foreign and strange. And for a democratic polity, that's a really dangerous thing. When these people are involved in the governance of our country primarily and they become divorced from the people they're supposed to be governing, we've got a fundamentally democratic problem there that has to be resolved. So I think the first step is pointing it out and acknowledging it and being aware of it.
Yeah, or the other step would be eventually just waiting for Trump to get elected here and then just complaining about that for 4 years.
Yeah, that is a productive.
Seems to be working well for the Democratic Party. Beaton and I did the quiz. We were both in betweeners, so we don't really fall into any of the camps. Yeah, we're our own people.
We just have a broad audience, I guess.
We speak for everyone. So did you do the quiz?
I did.
And where did you go?
I was also an in-betweener.
Ah, there we go.
See, yeah, I picked that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that, how did
I straddle the divide?
Yeah.
What was the question that you think got you that? Was it, I like Australia Day, but I eat avocado or something? Is that
Maybe. I think that's my background. I went to public schools. I came from Upper French Galley originally.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have come from I'm kind of more of an outer world. I'm not trying to say I'm kind of working class man, but you know, I did have a bit of experience that was different to a lot of my colleagues in Canberra.
Yeah. So you might be an in-betweener. I imagine you would work with a lot of inners in Canberra.
Almost exclusively.
So how do you reckon, like, as you say, it's going to be hard for them because if you do, like, these are people that watch the ABC and genuinely think the topics on Q&A are what all Australians are talking about week by week. But how can they breach out the gaps? So, like, because they don't want Trump to get elected in Australia, he's coming if this sort of stuff keeps up. So how do they step out of their own bubbles?
I think one of the biggest problems is the prevalence of higher education. You know, when you're in Canberra, one of the favourite topics to talk about is the groups that are underrepresented in Canberra. And there is a good case to make that, for example, women and immigrants are not well represented in Canberra compared to their proportion of the population. But there is no group less well represented in Canberra than people who don't have higher education. So only about a third of Australians have higher education, about two-thirds don't. And yet in Canberra, in Parliament House, it'll be close to 100% who have higher education. So that includes the Parliament, their staff, the media, the bureaucracy, almost everyone has higher education, and yet they don't look around and see that as a problem. They don't look around, and look, I'm guilty, I'm part of that, I've went to university, but at least I'm aware of the fact and I'm conscious of it, that most of them just are oblivious to the fact that this 70% of the community has almost no representation in Canberra in a physical sense. They're not there, so we have to be mindful of them and kind of be aware that we're setting policy for them too and not just people who went to university.
Absolutely. Yep. Senator James Patterson, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Okay, we now welcome back to the show once again one of the great friends of the show that we have, IPA's Director of the Foundations of Western Civilization Program, Dr. Bella DeBrera. Welcome back.
Thank you again.
Every time she comes back, she's even more famous.
I love it here.
And we love having you here, Bella. So, big week for Bella, one of the world's leading celebrities at the moment in the intellectual sphere, retweeted Bella's article.
One of the other ones.
Yeah, one of the other. Yeah, so you got one intellectual leader retweeting another intellectual leader of the world.
Yeah.
Bella, so Jordan Peterson retweeted your article. How are you feeling?
I'm in shock.
Yeah?
I'm in absolute shock. And I thought it was a joke when Dan announced it yesterday in the staff meeting. I think everyone thought it was a joke.
No, I didn't think it was a joke.
He's got a real dry sort of delivery, you know, and he's like, you know, what's his name? Jordan Peterson has shared Bella's article.
And everyone went, really?
Yeah, and then he, like, you know, his eyebrows furrowed as he's like, no, come on, guys, I'm being serious here.
Have you guys not read Jordan Peterson's newsletter by now?
Yeah. The Bella's article in Quillette, we'll talk about it in a little bit. Western Civilization Not Welcome Here is the name of the article. It's available at Quillette and also the IPA website, which now means that Bella's had two pretty big moments of her professional career in the last few weeks. Mm. We have being retweeted by Jordan Peterson, and we also have being read by the Queen when you had an article in the Times. Now, which would be the bigger one in your professional career? Read by the Queen, retweeted by Jordan Peterson.
Retweeted by Jordan Peterson.
Bigger than the Queen.
Much, much bigger than the Queen.
Okay, well, this is going to send chills down Morgan Begg's spine because he thought you two were the leading monarchists here at the IPA.
Jordan Peterson is the king of the dark intellectual web.
Well, that actually, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, he's the biggest celebrity of any of them.
He is.
My follow-up to that would be, are you now part of the intellectual dark web?
I don't know. I haven't had anyone approach me.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's definitely like...
Is that how it works?
Oh, yeah, a man in a dark coat will approach you and just say, you're in. And, like, you'll just know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think you're in. I'm not wearing a coat, but I do think you're in.
No one's approached me in a dark coat.
All right, well.
So. But how did that feel when you checked on Twitter and one of the world's greatest, most famous people had sort of sent this to their followers to say, read this so you can become, what is it, woke?
Well, I think there's an element of imposter syndrome, you know, that feeling.
Oh, I know it well.
That why would he possibly tweet something that, well, not only is he tweeting, I mean, obviously it implies that he's read the article, presumably.
Read it and liked it.
And liked it enough to want to forward it on to people. And I just feel like...
Maybe, I don't think you need to qualify maybe, that with presumably. I think that's literally what happened.
It makes me feel like he's made a mistake.
So, Jordan, we know you listen to the show.
That is not the line. No, just to clarify, people, it was the lead article in his weekly newsletter. The very
was
top
it?
One.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yep. Right at the top.
Bella, so, he's a big fan.
Anyway, we should
him and the Queen would have something to talk about, and that's their fan, exactly. Dr. Bella DeBrera.
We should tell the people what the article was about.
It came from the back of a conversation I had, which I talked about on your podcast a few weeks ago with a senior administrator at Monash University at my St. Andrews Alumni Drinks event. And it turned out that we were on very opposing sides of the world.
Metaphorically. You're in the same room.
So, you know, pro-Western Civ, anti-Western Civ, essentially. And so I just thought it would be an interesting article to write, sort of my experience at the very front line of this battle. And then it just turned into a big expose of historians, the new humanities, how history is being taught in Australia, all the issues that we've been talking about in the last year and a half, 2 years, sort of a collection, a summary of all the research I've been doing and all the sort of stories and things like that. And it came together quite well, I thought. So I think it's a nice sort of stop. Let's just look back and let's see what's happening now in history. And it's essentially... Historians have stopped talking about the past and they're now talking about the present, and they've recast themselves as social justice warriors. And I think that appealed to Jordan Peterson.
Absolutely, and the people of Quillette. I know it was a very popular article on Quillette. Now, at the start, you did reference something that I wanted to ask you about, because the story is based around the dinner party conversation you had with the person at the university, which you told on this show. Mm-hmm. So is this show just your testing ground for new material?
Yes.
Like if it works on this show, you'll use it in like other places. You'll just see how if it plays or not.
Yeah, like a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, yeah. If so we're the small club, yeah, and then over right. in Quillette or the Greek Theatre, that's where Bella's real, that's where the full hour special comes out.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
If Pete and James don't get sacked for it, it's good. So this guy who in your eyes is such a buffoon has given you such rich material for you to go out and tell your story.
Well, I never said he was a buffoon.
Yeah, mate, sorry, I'm verbalising you there.
Yeah. He did off air and they told us not to say that. No, that's obviously a joke.
No, he's not a buffoon. It's just it's the divide that we're facing between one side and the other at the moment, and he represents the other side.
Absolutely. We talked a bit about the story on the previous time that you were on the show. So if people want to listen to that story and a few of the other things like the Ramsey Center, they can go back and listen there. But one thing I thought was new for me in this article. So you talked about Hegel and Marx and how their approach to history sort of informs modern identity politics. Do you want to talk about like what Hegel and Marx were talking about and where that influence comes from?
Their influence is pretty much the idea that history and society and history has to be looked at in terms of oppressed versus oppressor. So Marx said you can only look at history in terms of a class structure.
Yeah, the bourgeoisie, the proletariat.
And that has just been extended to now include race and gender by modern historians. So it comes directly from Marx's idea of you can only look at history through this narrow lens, and now they've sort of increased the narrow lens very, very slightly to include race and gender. So yeah. That's where the influence comes from. It's not just the point of talk giving it its own historical explanation is that it didn't just come in the last 10 or 15 years. It's not a new invention. These ideas just never sort of appear out of the blue. It's something that has been boiling in the background for a long time, and it's now manifesting itself as modern day identity politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon that was a pretty good summary of Marx in 45 seconds.
Yeah, you should turn that into your own sort of like communist pamphlet, like a little pamphlet to just go alongside the Communist Manifesto.
Another little red book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, very clever. What was next? Sorry, we talk about how these ideas have been building up over a long period of time, which sort of gives you the idea that like they're not going away anytime soon. So what other things that we as a society sort of need to cultivate and praise and respect for to push back against the identity politics?
Well, first of all, the notion of the individual, which is completely lost in identity politics, the notion that we have our own opinions and that we are that there's a sense of self-determination is completely lost, because you're immediately just part of the collective, and your opinion is that of the collective rather than your own. So we have to go back to that idea of individuality.
And clearly these ideas, like this idea about how the individual is important and matters, are popular with young people, as you have found in your experience at universities and with working with Generation Liberty and stuff like that.
Yes, there's very much a sense that on campus they like to class themselves not as a group.
Yeah, we're thinking about like the popularity of Jordan Peterson with young people on YouTube, sitting down to watch, you know, long length videos about historical issues. Like this kind of stuff is sort of filling a gap that universities aren't.
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely. One of the messages that the very strong messages that Jordan Peterson talks about a lot is this notion of the individual and how we're being broken up into the collective, and mm-hmm. we have to come up with a new narrative for the individual because the left have come up with this narrative for the collective, and so he's trying to say we need to come up with our own narrative. And I think that's where it appeals to the younger generations, because they're not hearing that anywhere else. That and there's this idea that you are responsible for your future and how your life goes, not the state, not anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so move on. So you are working on a new documentary at the moment. We kind of want to keep it a bit hush because it's top secret. It's going to be a whole lot of fun when it does come out.
But Area 51.
Well, without the aliens.
In terms of secrecy.
Yeah.
But it's not about aliens.
We didn't capture an alien. I want that on record.
Yeah.
But what thing you are looking at in this documentary, without giving too much away, is what the Australian, what like early Australians were reading when they were thinking about like how do we set up a new society in Australia. So what were the highlights for you making this video? What were some of the things that you were learning along the way?
I learned so much on the way. I learned that the early colonists were really very much considered themselves part of the Enlightenment. They didn't think of themselves as just a separate from it. They knew they were living through the Industrial Revolution. They'd lived through the French Revolution.
Yeah, so in the same way that you're part of the intellectual dark web, other Australians thought they were part of the Enlightenment.
Am I?
I think so at this point.
Yeah, I'm saying yes.
Yes. All right. Pete and I are saying yes. Motion carried, motion Nina's passed. Nina? Yeah, okay. 3-1. 3-1 into Bella's part of the dark web.
Do I get a badge or something?
Yeah, okay. I can maybe a ceremonial hat. I do like a good ceremonial hat.
We all do.
We all do.
Yeah,
who could complain?
Yeah.
Where were we?
What's the funnest thing about the video?
So, the funnest thing about the video. So, yeah, so I learned a lot. I learned a lot.
What did I learn?
I learned, so the funnest thing, the most fun, the most enjoyable aspect, was going six floors under the State Library of New South Wales to look at their books.
And you're sure you're not part of the intellectual dark web, going like deep chambers underground the State Library.
It's incredible because the lift goes the wrong way. It doesn't go up, it goes down. Way down. Yeah. I mean, obviously all lifts go down eventually.
Yeah, sometimes. But
So just being shown a copy of... I've forgotten his name.
It's all good. It's all gone out.
This has to go out. This is really important. The magician. The famous magician. Houdini. So I was shown an original copy of Houdini's book signed by Houdini for someone in Australia that ended up in the library. They also have the original Bible that belonged to Captain Cook that went all the way around the world with him.
Wow.
Very nice.
And I saw that. And they also have a massive collection of Cervantes, which is quite unusual.
Yeah, shout out to the Great Books of Literature podcast.
So Don Quixote everywhere. So that was the most exciting part, was actually going down and looking at the books and looking at the books that they brought with them. Like, you know, original copies, first editions of from the 1600s and things.
Yeah,
so
very cool.
So not all government spending's bad.
No, this is very good government spending, I would argue.
There you go.
Very good. So take that. We'll talk on one more thing. So we talked about your upcoming speech in UK. Yep. We're all really looking forward to that one. And then after that, you're going to go to a holiday through Israel. Now, Israel is the most incredible country I've ever visited in my life. How much are you looking forward to it?
So much. I'm looking forward to it so much.
Very good. Anything in particular highlighted?
I want to go to the Get the Five Shekel Bakery bagels.
I don't know that, and now I want to go back.
Not for
So I'm going, and there's a market apparently where I'm staying next door. There's a famous market.
There's a huge market.
You would have been to that one. But I was reading in my guidebook and had a bit of a chuckle because there's something called the Jerusalem Syndrome. Have you heard of that?
No. I've heard of Stockholm Syndrome, which is basically this podcast, but haven't heard of the Jerusalem Syndrome.
So the Jerusalem Syndrome strikes people of all religions when they go to Jerusalem and they get overwhelmed by the religiosity of the experience. Have you heard of this?
I've now heard of this, yeah.
And people go stand on corners and give impromptu sermons and shout and sing hymns really loudly and shout
out. I hope that you shout join them, Bella. Psalms.
That will be fun. That'll be a fun video to go viral.
You've got a lot to give in that regard.
So I'm hoping that I see someone that is struck with the Jerusalem Syndrome when I'm there. That's going to be the highlight.
Now, there's one part, there's one church near the market called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And I want to bring this up because I think Pete would really like this story.
That is the church.
That is the church. Yeah. So a lot of religious people are just like panning, and they can't go, and that is the church, mate. Anyway, it is a huge church, but in like 10 different denominations of Christianity, even more, they all love it.
Yes.
And they all share it as well, which has led to so many fist fights between different parts of the church.
We need a Google Doc for all the services.
And I read that because they can't agree, the people that have the keys to the church are actually Muslims.
Yeah, it's a Muslim family. Yeah. They've held the key through generations. We have that guy's business card in our house.
Really?
He hands them out to people as they go in.
Oh, you
just
met
sits
the
there,
guy.
He's got the key. He's like the only guy they can trust.
Really?
Like the day before we were there, some guy was like, in his part of the church.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to sit in the sun. So he moved his chair just over his border.
Yeah.
Immediate brawl. No.
Yeah,
okay. I'm looking forward to it immensely.
It is so much fun.
Now, you'll be staying at youth hostels whilst you're in Israel. Is that right, Bella?
I am.
Because you're a woman
of the
people.
Have you packed an acoustic guitar?
I'm not quite a youth, but I'm hoping to get away with it. Just because hotels are really expensive there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going cheap. And I'm going undercover.
That was a serious question. Have you packed an acoustic guitar?
No, I've not packed an acoustic guitar.
You need to. If you're staying in a youth hostel.
Think about it.
Youth hostel.
Youth hostel.
Yeah. If you're looking around and no one's got an acoustic guitar, you should have the acoustic guitar.
What about a harmonica?
Works a bit more prisony than hostel-y, but I can see the appeal.
I can imagine it fitting into my luggage. And I can play one, so.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I did not know that. You're a woman of hidden talents.
Okay, very cool. Dr. Bella Dubrow, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, thank you too, Senator James Patterson and Dr. Bella Dubrow for those interviews. Go read James Patterson's articles on his website, and Dr. Bella Dubrow's piece from Quillette is also on the IPA website. Let's get into some stories that made us laugh this week, Pete, and let us start off with a bit of fitness chat.
Yeah, right. So as you know, James, my body's my temple, James and Nana.
Dionysus and Buddha and any other dark god.
Darren Lehman.
So, Mark Cosgrove.
Yeah, oh, okay. So there was a piece in The Guardian last week by Zoe Williams, and it was called Do You Boast About Your Fitness? Watch out, you'll unavoidably become right wing. So that sounds like a serious piece. Now I'm going to take a quote out of it. Do too much, fitness she's talking about, and the love, sorry, and the self-love develops a carapace, which is the upper hard shell of a tortoise, crustacean, or arachnid. I've looked that up. So self-love develops a carapace of self-sufficiency. Unavoidably over time, this makes you more right wing as you descend into an aerobics-powered moral universe where only the weak need each other and all the strong need is a water pouch in their backpack that pipes straight into their mouths. Well, James, Nina, this body doesn't just happen. So, and I put this in the lefties hate bogans file. I've got lots of files.
I want to actually talk about this seriously.
Oh, okay.
Because there are two types of fitness, right? Now, for like strength people and people that like do, you know, CrossFit and stuff like that, she's 100% right.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay.
Like, I completely agree with Zoe. But like the other side of fitness, you know, like the yoga, mindfulness, meditation, that kind of stuff, that's very left wing.
We calling that fitness?
The yoga instructors I know tend to be very fit.
Yoga. Yeah, I'll give you yoga.
Yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, I actually think she's kind of right here. Like, I know we can do funny Guardian stories all the time, but the second I saw that article, I'm like, well, she's not wrong.
No, but I mean, there's, like, she's saying right wing is bad. Like, she's saying being right wing is automatically bad. That's the assumption she's making.
But I'm saying if you work out, you know, all day and post plenty of pictures, I think it goes hand in hand with being right wing. Is my theory. Is my theory.
The listeners right, yeah, that's all right. I think that she hates beauty and achievement and humanity and advancement and camaraderie and community.
Well, yeah, and then you go like the jealousy of people with good bodies, which is what's coming through the article.
Yeah, I like that. People with good bodies.
The showing. My quote from the article was like, the showing off couldn't be plainer. And she's like, you know, quoting people that talk to her. So here I am improving myself with willpower and grit. And because I was so great to start with, I'm shortly to become even better. So jealousy of that kind of thinking is a very left-wing thing. Like, is my thing. So how dare those people show pride in their achievements?
Yeah.
Very left wing.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we're split on this.
We're split. Nina, tiebreaker.
Yeah, tiebreaker, oh my God.
I don't really care about fitness, actually. So if like...
So Nina's left wing.
So you're like... You're
I probably a left wing.
Yeah, so Nina's...
probably, yeah.
We've led a socialist into the podcast. this is tough. Cool, so we'll move on.
The Soviets did well at the Olympics, so...
Ooh, good point. But they were using drugs.
Yeah, so. But even like using drugs... Shows that with Kane.
Is using steroids right anyway. Wing. Future think piece from Peter Gregory.
That's
cool. So I got another one here. So there's like national conferences of UK Labour Party, UK Conservative Party. They're underway at the moment.
Democracy in action.
Democracy in action. And I think my sister's at the Conservative one.
Really?
Yeah, I think that got mentioned on the Vote Report last night. I should probably pay a bit more attention to where my sister's at. Anyway, Labour one. Pretty funny thing happened. So a few weeks ago, remember we were talking about like the non-hate crime incidents, like South Yorkshire Police? Yeah, so we played a bit of the interview that, this talk radio host, Julia Hartley Brewer, when she was like interviewing the commissioner and he's like, oh, you know, but non-crime hate incidents can feel like crime to people. And you just, wow. But anyway, so Julia Hartley Brewer, she's got herself in a bit of hot water.
And she really eviscerated that guy.
She did. And she got herself in a bit of hot water. She went to the UK Labour conference and she found like the official safe space of the conference. And she made a Twitter video, which like was a camera just coming in and she's sitting in the conference, sitting in the safe space and she just goes, boo.
Yeah.
She's now been banned from next year's Labour Party conference.
Yeah, well, they said it was a hate crime.
They said it was a hate crime. And they also said, like, we've received a number of complaints about her behaviour during the conference on our premises, which we have looked into, you know, just, like, sort of covering up for it, I guess. But, like, how do you ban someone? Like, that is a party ready for government. If you can't shout boo in a safe space, take over the country.
What?
You've got my vote.
Don't they reckon that'll play really badly with the punters?
Well, that's the thing. Like, we were about to feature this in Hague. I cut it the last minute, but there was like this article by Mick Hume in Spiked, which is just like the divide between the Labour Party top brass and the punters. Like, the top brass are going like, how dare Julia Hartley Brewer interview in a safe space, somewhere we can be okay. And every Labour Party punter would just be like, that's hilarious.
That's so stupid. Yeah, and the thing was, there was no one in it. Like, in the video, it's empty.
Yeah, there was like she wasn't like, excuse me, all, yeah, excuse me, guys, can you hop out here for a second?
Can you perform a hate crime if no one's there to witness it?
Yeah, if the tree
forest thing,
yeah, exactly,
that tree thing. You guys know what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So if a tree commits a hate crime in a forest,
yeah,
anyway,
banned.
I liked all this. The conference arrangements committee has decided that Julie Hartley Brewer's conduct and the considerable distress she caused vulnerable groups, coupled with her refusal to apologise despite even giving several opportunities, falls below the acceptable standards we uphold to let a journalist into our national conference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're obviously very committed to the free press. I like this woman. She's a bit of a troll. I don't know much about her, but the two things I've seen her do have been excellent.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get her on the show. That's enough for us. Yeah. You do two good things, you've got a welcome spot.
It's not a very high wall. Yeah.
The guest chair is empty.
Okay. All right. With no disrespect to our guests, by the way.
Oh, there's a bit of disrespect there, actually.
James is a senator. Like, man, that's a good achievement. All right. So, let's move on. Human mascot.
Yes.
Oh, that's the heading.
Discuss.
So, what now? Yeah, no. So, the California State University Long Beach have scrapped their Prospector Pete mascot, which I'm triggered about because my name's Peter, because it represents threats of genocide and subjugation against Indigenous people that occurred in California around the 1849 gold rush. The founding president of the university in 1949 said, we're going to have this, what's it called, mascot, because he had, and I quote, struck the gold of education. So a bit of cheese factor there, but sounds reasonably innocent. The quote is, students and some faculty have suggested the university avoid modelling. Oh, so hang on, that's the first bit. The second bit is, following the fact that, you know, we can't have this guy called Prospector Pete, is this idea that actually any form of human mascot is likely to offend someone. And they've said, this is the university, students and some faculty have suggested the university avoid modelling a new mascot after a specific group or person to prevent appropriating a culture or offending others on campus in the future. No human mascots.
None at all. What I like about this, so Prospector Pete hits the dirt.
Which I'm triggered about, yeah. I should add.
So what you've got here for me is jealousy of bad history, because you had so many like southern universities over the last year tearing down statues of Civil War generals, yeah. And the students at this California State are like, look, we weren't involved in the Civil War, there's no one like, you know, General Lee, there's no General Lee statue I can take down here. Suddenly Prospector Pete really starts becoming bigger in your mind.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I need to stand up to something. And like, seriously, if Prospector Pete, that name is the worst thing your campus has going for it, it's a pretty good campus.
He's just a friendly miner.
Exactly. He's mining education. Mining gold for the students. Yeah, that's the one.
Anyway, Nina, you absolutely raged out about this.
Yeah.
Nina went nuts.
I went nuts.
Go on.
It's like, thoughts. Like, people like have to stop overthink everything. Like, stop politicizing everything. Like, this is just a statue.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the meaning just like, oh, because I struck gold, so education is the goal. That's like the point of it. Like, there's nothing, like, nothing to do with the whole history thing. Like, I'm not defying the history of happened. Like, I'm all that. If you want to pursue that, that's fine. But this is not happening. Like, this is not supposed to happen. Like, why? It's just a statue. Like,
what do you
think? Even the name is ridiculous.
Well, hang on. The name is
Hang on. We've got to give Nina the Q&A clap there.
Can I just... Okay. Thank you.
The name is Pete Nina.
I know, like the first.
That is a ridiculous name.
That's a name. Like, why do you put? Why do you name it Pete anyway? Like, you can give me something like Jack or John.
That doesn't have. That, you can't go Prospector Jack. It's got to have some start of Pete.
I know.
What about no human mascots at all?
No human mascot. That's. Well, I'm like, I'm speechless. Actually, why no human mascot? Well, people can be a mascot. Why not?
It is a concession that, like, you can be offended by anything.
Yeah,
like,
well...
Like, it's just like, just, look, don't even start. Because if they're offended by Prospector Pete, they will find something... Like, it could... They could have Neil deGrasse Tyson as the school, you know, mascot. And someone
I don't
be
know
like,
who that is.
Well, it's just like a very friendly science guy that everyone, like, a lot of millennials like. But if he was, like, suddenly the school mascot, he just talked about astrophysics for a while, someone would be like, I don't like this anymore.
Yep. Women in STEM.
Yeah.
You know what? This one's going to like, this is just human, not like, we don't, like, they don't want a human mascot, right?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, people will be oversensitive about this, overthinking about this. Like, Mickey Mouse, why would have a rat for a Mickey Mouse? Like, why does a mouse can speak like a human? Yeah. We're going to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know what? This is the future we're going to have.
All right, another Q&A clap.
Can I just...
Okay. Thank you.
Another Q&A clap.
Nina's gone nuts.
I'm going nuts.
Nina has been standing up for the last 2 minutes. We're very intimidated right now. Let's get out of here. Cool. Well, we shouldn't have given Nina the Q&A clap, actually, Pete. We should not have.
No.
The University of Manchester Students' Union would be in fits had they known that Nina was just giving the Q&A clap. Sorry, the reason I bring this up. So BBC Northwest tweeted out that the University of Manchester Students' Union events has now banned clapping to be replaced by jazz hands to express support.
What's a jazz hand?
This thing.
Ah, so he just did, the waving.
Bad radio, but I'm sort of just like waving my hands like that. Google. I don't know. If you've seen this, like seen an amateur Broadway, like amateur theatre production, you've seen jazz hands in your time.
Mm-hmm.
This has been something that's happened before. Like, I remember we did it in Hay a few years ago, but yeah, banning clapping because it can trigger anxiety and replacing with jazz hands. My point remains, if I said something and then a room full of people I don't know started doing jazz hands... That would make me so much more anxious than clapping. That I don't care what I said, but if everyone as one just started doing that.
That's got to be true.
I'm really getting off that stage very quickly.
And like, you know, it is a, we should, you know, people with autism and Asperger's and stuff like that can be really, what's the word?
Triggered.
Yeah, triggered, scared and upset by loud applause. That's fine. But, you know, this is a bit ridiculous. And the jazz hands thing, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
That is truly terrifying.
That's like that. That to me is the first 5 minutes of a Children of the Corn horror film. If like 200 people just started doing that, I'm like, well, they're about to kill me.
Surely people would just be like, just start clapping again, please.
Yeah, please, for the love of God, just applaud.
Yeah.
Just boo. Boo. I would rather the booing.
Yeah, than so the jazz we're hands. Booing, jazz hands, and clapping this edition.
Yeah.
And mascots.
And mascots. So we're really ready to watch a high school football game in America. Anyway, that is it for the show this week, is it?
That's all I've got, mate.
That's all I've got too. All right, sorry.
Nina, you right?
Nina, are we all in a good place?
I'm done.
All right, we're ready for the weekend. All right, thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And thank you to Senator James Patterson and Dr. Bella DeBrera for the interviews. Sorry, this podcast, we're available on iTunes, Spotify. There's the one I forgot to mention earlier in the show. Podbean, you can also download it through heaps of other stuff like Pocket Casts or, you know, I don't have an Android. I don't know what the Android apps are, but...
The website,
you can do that. So millions of ways you can download the show. Millions of ways your friends and family can download the show, which is why I bring it up. Make sure you're telling them about the show. If you are listening on iTunes, make sure you're leaving us that 5-star review. Really helps us out with the rankings. And in the comments section, you can leave a tip for the show, maybe a story you've seen, maybe something you want us to talk about.
Or something you want Nina to talk about.
Something you want Nina to talk about.
Nina specifically.
Boy, oh boy, was that a debut for the ages of Nina Goes Nuts. pending title.
It's a working title.
Working in progress.
A lot of progress to be made. Where was I? I think I'd done that part. So, Nina, if people are new to the show, if they're new to the IPA, where can they go to become a member? And if they are already a member of the IPA, where can they go to donate? If they like what the IPA does, if they like what people talk about and they want to support our projects.
Yeah, tell Wayne Swan where to go.
Yeah.
Oh, he knows where to go.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know where to go, just go to our website, ipa.org.au, and to donate, just click the donate button, and to join, just click on the join button, and starting as low as $22 per year, you'll become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. See you guys next week.
Have a great weekend.